Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, horses, dragons, space lasers, and authors fighting showrunners. My name is Dan Selke. I'm the editor of winterscoming.net, here with Daniel Roman, who has a lot of hair, the other editor of winterscoming.net. I was gone last week. Glad you guys had a great time without me. But I'm back this time, and I've come back on what will henceforth be known as Drama Wednesday. Daniel, how are you, and what's going on?
I am good, Dan. I am good. And I think what's going on, sounds like people in the chat already know. We've got a fair bit of juicy Westeros-tinged drama going on this Wednesday. Fully unplanned, I would just like to say. We had a whole ass show planned that was not this, but now we need to talk about this because there's some stuff happening. But how are you, Dan?
I'm pretty well. I was out last week because I was seeing the Lord of the Rings, a musical tale musical here in Chicago at the Shakespeare Theater. It was so entertaining, and I'm so glad that I saw it. It was fun. It was interesting. It was different. We'll talk about it later. But yeah, let's dive into this now. So if you guys aren't aware, so this is mostly kind of at its roots, a Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Westeros podcast. And there is some drama bubbling between some of the main players behind the scenes of these shows. So George R. R. Martin, the author of A Song of Ice and Fire and Fire and Blood, the show on which Game of Thrones, House of Dragon are based on respectively, has been teasing for a while that he is going to share his issues with the second season of House of Dragon that wrapped up last month, I think.
Indeed.
And today he did, or he started to. Quite frankly, this blog post sounds like the first salvo in what could be a barrage.
This is a start.
Yeah. And he's hinted that he's had some problems with it. Look, we reviewed House of the Dragon pretty thoroughly here. Feel free to go back and watch other episodes, reviewing the episodes. And look, we read Fire and Blood. We're fans of the books. Are you really happy? I know what's up.
Oh, no, I'm just looking at in the chat, TGRLWTFR. Tell me how to pronounce your name. I'm sorry, it's just a bunch of letters. Saying, hi, guys, this is insane. r/ASOIAF, that's the Song of Ice and Fire Reddit. They're deleting any post that mentions the George R. Martin blog post. Oh, he deleted the blog. HBO
he
said
did
not today.
Woo! He deleted the internet, it?
The internet remembers.
Wait, I see it. Oh, wait, no, I don't. Whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, clearly things are being intense, so we will go ahead and talk about it. So George R. Martin wrote this blog post. I think it was called Beware the Butterflies or something.
Yes.
And he basically did what he promised. He said he has some problems House of the Dragon. He's going to share them. And he did it in a respectful way. It wasn't a complete trashing or anything. I don't think it's fair to portray it like that. But he basically went over some problems he had with the show changing his book. Specifically in the first episode of the second season, A Son for a Son, which ended with the blood and cheese incident where a couple of hired goons decapitate Helena Targaryen's young son, Jaehaerys. And look, again, we read the book. We knew there were tons of changes. We didn't like all of them. Some of them were good. That was kind of my opinion of the entire season. I had some issues, but I liked a lot of them too. This one I didn't love. And George R. R. Martin just basically went through all the changes. And to him, he did not really enjoy them. He was talking about. So in the book version of this, in the show version of this scene, Helena, blood and cheese, these mercenaries find Helena Targaryen of the Red Keep, sent by Daemon Targaryen, and they confront her with her two twins, Harris and Jahara. They're like, which one's the boy? She's like, that one. They kill the boy. She runs away. And it took out a lot from George R. R. Martin's book, where Helena has three kids, Jahara, Jaharis, and Maelor. And Blood and Cheese make her choose which of the sons to die, Maelor and Jaharis. She chooses Maelor. They kill Jaharis instead. And then they peace
out. After begging that she kill her instead. That's a big thing that they cut in the show. She just tried to give him a necklace instead.
Which, by the way, that to me is the most baffling bit. Another funny bit is that at the same time this blog post dropped, HBO released a special episode of the House of the Dragon podcast where Ryan Condal is asked questions about adaptation, and he kind of explains why he chose to do what he did, or why his team did, which seemed pretty clearly like it was timed to do some damage control, because they knew that George R. R. Martin's blog post was going live, and they knew that we were going to have to say something about it. And I didn't mind his explanation. He was saying that, you know, it's hard to hire these very young child actors. At minimum, the reason they were asleep, not awake like they are in the book, is because you're not going to get that level of drama out of like 4-year-old actors. You're just not, which I do sympathize with. I get it. I didn't really mind the cutting of Maelor. I did think not having Helena react more dramatically was a really weird choice. Because if your son is getting decapitated, wouldn't you be upset? And that she wasn't, that she didn't beg for, like, take me instead, seems like a natural thing to do. I didn't understand that. But anyway, George R. Martin didn't like any of this. And his main gripe was cutting Maelor, this younger son. Because how detailed do I get here? Basically, Maelor lives in the book and he dies at a later point. And that death is the precipitation of another huge event. I'll just go ahead and spoil it. You're already talking about it in the comments. Yeah,
I think we can spoiler this one. George spoiled it on his blog today. So if you really don't want the spoiler from Fire and Blood, maybe tune out for a couple of minutes. But we're going to talk about it.
So, perhaps that's why he deleted the post. Yeah, it's weird.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Anyway, so Helena's son, Maelor, sent away from the city, as is Jahara, the other surviving kid. Jahara gets to safety, relatively speaking, and Maelor is killed, torn apart by a mob who wants to get the reward. And when news of that reaches King's Landing, it is kind of what pushes Helena over the edge, and she takes her own life. And that precipitates another big event, where the people of King's Landing riot, and they push Rhaenyra out of the city. Broad strokes, I think it's enough. And George Martin is basically complaining about or saying that, well, if we don't have Maelor, then he's not going to die. And that's not going to push Helena over the edge. And whoever said that we need to stop acting like Helena's going to die in season 3, part of George Martin's original blog post was he says that in the outline, at least, Helena's suicide is in there. But for season 3 House of the Dragon, but it happens for no particular reason now, because he thinks this reason is going to be removed, which is probably the sauciest bit of the entire blog post.
Yes.
The most snarky. I'm going to say one more thing and turn it over to you. So personally, I mean, I'm not a writer on the TV show. I should be, but I'm not. I can imagine other things driving Elena to despair. I agree with the commenter who said that, yeah, it definitely does bother me. She doesn't grieve. It doesn't seem like a terribly human reaction, which is not really touching what Martin touched on or what Connor touched on in his response. I didn't really get the way they did Helena this season. I mean, I've never been a parent yet, but I don't know. If you see your young son decapitated, wouldn't you be upset? Like, I can imagine that getting into you, and that they didn't really have that arc for her was weird. Somebody thinks that it was unprofessional of Martin and petty. I imagine that that probably occurred to him too. He did say in the post that, you know, he thought the episodes were terrific. He complimented the team on what they did. But yeah, he was also pretty salty. He's very attached to this stuff. I also agree with Esso. What's supposed to say? Say nothing. Which he could. This is a knotty, difficult topic. Martin clearly cares about this stuff. He clearly cares about his work, and he cares about how it's portrayed, and he's invested in it. And it clearly upsets him when they change this much, and they have changed a lot. So,
yes,
clearly he had a battle in his head. Maybe it wasn't the right decision to publish this. Clearly, again, he might have thought so because he retracted it. It was honest. I don't think anybody's really the bad guy here. I will say, I don't even really think that taking out Maelor need cripple the rest of the series. And there's that final bit in the blog post where he teased more toxic butterflies to come. I was made nervous, though, by a lot of what happened in season 2, and am concerned about maybe leaving this team to make changes unadulterated. But we can talk about that a little later. Daniel, what are your first impressions of this whole Falder floop?
Yeah. So I wanted, let me see. There were some comments I wanted to respond to, and I think I have no doubt
you guys are lighting it up.
Because you guys are really, really active in the chat, which we love. Great to see you here. Mm. I think whoever said in the chat that probably him mentioning the season 3 stuff, the season 3 outline that he had seen might have been, I think if HBO could have pulled anything on him aside from just like a general disparagement clause or something, it probably would be that would make it, because he's been saying he's going to do this for a while. So it's not like this is, you know, it was on their radar. I highly believe it was like he made headlines last week saying, I'm going to talk about this soon. And now he talked about it and the post is suspiciously gone. And HBO, like you said, put out an unplanned episode of their official House of the Dragon podcast today. And I say unplanned because they had one more final episode they were planning to do. And this is not it. They say at the beginning, we've pushed that one back, but we had a lot of questions from book listeners about the changes to adaptations and the book to screen changes. So we just thought we'd bring Ryan Condal onto the podcast to answer them. To me, and this is speculation. It really reads like HBO saw that George R. R. Martin was saying, I'm going to come throw some shade at House of the Dragon. And they wanted to get ahead of it. Because when does someone ever expect George R. R. Martin to turn around and publish a thing like 3 days later that he said he was going to publish? Like, he was pretty damn fast with this whole Helena Maelor post that came out today. So I think my read is I think HBO was hoping to get ahead of it with their House of the Dragon podcast. Put out really quickly, you know, days after Martin said he was going to talk about this. And it made headlines all across the internet. They didn't get ahead of it. Martin beat them to it by posting his thing about Maelor. And I think, I thought he was pretty even-handed with his discussion of Blood and Cheese, right? He said he could agree with both show watchers who enjoyed it, because on premise, it's still a really good scene, while still seeing the perspective of the scene in the book was better. And he could understand, you know, it sounds like he had discussed with Ryan Condal that they were going to push Maelor back to season three. Helena would give birth late in the show, and she'd have a baby, basically. But instead, at some point, unbeknownst to him, it sounds like, it became the case that they just decided they weren't going to do Maelor at all. And then that obviously has a cascading effect. Can they still find ways for Helena's ultimate fate to work? Sure. But will it be as compelling as what he wrote? I don't know. You know, after season two, I think it's pretty fair to be skeptical about it. It is rare to see this level of feuding from authors who are still on good terms with their adaptations, like who haven't been like written out of it or something. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like Ursula K. Le Guin with that Earthsea adaptation, which we may or may not talk about a little bit more, but there was an adaptation of Ursula K. Le Guin's Earthsea books in like the early 2000s. And it did some things with the characters, like it whitewashed her characters in a way she found really off-putting. And she didn't have any attachment to that adaptation. So she just said, this sucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm free to tell you that it sucks. But Martin is still pretty involved. I thought he kind of tiptoed very close to the line of disrespectful with this. I don't think it was over the line. I think he still comported himself in pretty much the way he always does. And he did this with Game of Thrones too, where he grumbled about butterflies and whatever. But yeah, you haven't listened to any of the House of the Dragon podcast yet, right?
All of it.
Oh, you listened to all of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Twice. So what was your take on it? Because I'm not going to lie, when it first dropped, I was like, oh, damn, I feel kind of bad for these guys. And then I listened to it and it just made me mad. So what was your opinion on it?
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. I agree. It was probably the season 3 thing that maybe got him to take it down. I disagree with you. I do think this crossed a bit of a line. I mean, Martin's been in TV for a long time. Like I sympathize that he clearly cares about this. Obviously, that's why we love him. That's why he's so good.
Yes.
But I don't know, to talk about what's coming in the third season in an outline that may or may not get published seems a little.
I can
believe that that was what maybe caused HBO to say like, hey.
Agree.
Take that down, maybe. I mean, professional and professional. He has his feelings. I don't think it's bad for him to express them. I like that he's this passionate. I think it's a messy situation. I don't think there are villains. And no, I wasn't mad listening to Ryan Condal. I thought a lot of his explanations made sense. So he kind of walked through a lot of different questions about why he changed what he did. And the conclusion that I basically drew from them is, I get why you thought you needed to make this change here. I just didn't always like the change he made. Like, he talks about Daemon and Harrenhal. And he's talking about, in the book, it just says he rolls over there and raises an army. And we were like, well, we had to give Matt Smith something interesting to do. And okay, I can see where you're saying that. And the problem is, you didn't really give him anything interesting to do. I thought the dreams were pretty shallow and superficial, not very interesting. I thought it dragged. I thought from something else, or just don't have him in as much. They don't address the multiple Alicent Rhaenyra meetings, but they do. He does talk about, well, we decided to tell the story from the point of view of Alicent and Rhaenyra and Viserys's family. And I'm like, okay, I see why you want to narrow down, but I think in deciding to commit to Allison and Rhaenyra as the main characters, it probably felt like they needed to get them back together, even though they had to like contort, in my opinion, the plot into weird shapes to make it happen. In psychology, there's this thing called functional fixedness, where you have trouble looking at an object and seeing it as anything other than its intended purpose. So like if you have a box is for putting things in, and that keeps you from using it creatively, like as a step or something, or the mind of a child, like a box can be a time machine or a car. I feel like if you decide that Allison and Rhaenyra are your main characters, then you can't countenance the big dramatic pivots of the season not involving them, even though forcing it to involve them feels forced. I don't disagree with the logic how they got to that point. I just don't think the choices were good. Like cutting nettles, mm-hmm. too, he addressed. And he's like, well, we wanted it to be about Viserys' family, and we're going to make Rhaena an important part of it. And so
garbage choice.
He didn't. Wow, you're intense. He didn't say Nelson Scott, but it's like pretty clear that they're replacing the character Nettles from the book with Rhaena from the show, which I'm sure could be a good story. Just it felt like because they decided this is about Viserys' family, giving a lot of time to a character who is outside of that family wasn't part of the plan. Again, kind of functional fixedness. I don't think it's a good choice, but I didn't think his explanations were like incredibly bizarre. I feel like some screenwriters get into this, like they fetishize arcs. You know, it's always like, what's the character's arc? And no one ever, I feel like no one ever says like, well, maybe this season they don't have an arc. Like maybe it's a long game. It's okay for them not to change their entire viewpoint for a season and just to kind of do some stuff and get from point A to point B in the plot, and they can change their internal lives another time. But I feel like it's like a dogma in screenwriting that a character needs an arc every season. So Daemon has to go from this place where he's against Rhaenyra to where he accepts her. Even though the actual journey, I don't think was very entertaining. And I think it made him less interesting as a character in the end. So that's kind of my read on what happened, but it didn't make me mad. No, it made me think that he's a screenwriter trying to do his best. I like some of the changes. I liked the Battle of Rooksrest change where Aemond blasts Aegon. I thought that was fun. Yeah. And he talked about that too. But I do think there is a lot of like change for change's sake, or I didn't like a lot of the choices they made, and some of them I did. My main concern now is like, how do they come back from this? Are they in a feud? Is it just the perception they're in a feud? And is there much of a difference? Like, is this damaging to be kind of openly online in a bit of a very polite war of words with the person who created the show that you are making, who wrote the book that you were adapting? I don't think it's a good look. Although people do love drama. Kendrick and Drake were more interesting fighting than they'd ever been apart. So maybe this will only be a huge, exciting thing. People just love to slap up a spoon.
I think that will be an interesting thing, and time will tell. I do agree that it's not a great look. I do agree that it also brings attention. I also think, you know, how much will it affect not chronically online people? Probably not very much. So there are all these different levels of how much of an issue is this really? I imagine they're all having conversations today, honestly. If he pulled down his post, they're obviously communications are happening. But, you know, I agree with you. Like, a show like this is going to have to make changes. But I like there's just kind of like I don't want to say condescending, but like so choosing to focus on Allison and Rhaenyra, like, for example, that's a fine choice, but twisting and turning things to be able to make it so they meet every season is just not having confidence in your audience being able to have the attention span to carry through. You know,
I agree.
Jon Snow and Daenerys and Cersei Lannister were some of the main characters of Game of Thrones. They basically hardly ever met until very late in the series, you know, not counting the time when everyone was at Winterfell where Cersei and Jon didn't even cross paths. So, like, you know, that's kind of the nature of these big sprawling stories is not everyone's going to meet every time. The things that bugged me about the House of the Dragon podcast, because it did really feel like damage control to me.
It was.
They got into the, yes, it was. And if you listen to it, Ryan Condal kind of stutters over his words a little bit more at the end when he's asked specifically about how he handles things with George. So this is one of the things that frustrated me. And this is a common topic. So let us know in the chat what you think about this. So Condal said on the podcast, unlike A Song of Ice and Fire or A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, Fire and Blood is a history book. It's not a narrative. It's not written in point of view. It is a history described by three unreliable narrators. There are intentional, which is not 100% correct, but we don't need to split hairs on it. There are intentional holes in the historical fabric. That's part of the fun in the way that it was written. And I think the other thing to highlight too is that there aren't characters in the text per se, but rather historical figures. Now, of course, Daemon and Allison and Rhaenyra are all characters because they occupy a fictional world, but the way that they are covered in the historical text is the way that any historical text would be covered, or a historical figure would be covered in a history book. So as dramatists, I think we have to approach this history as though it is fictional, as anyone would do adapting a chapter from real history. And I think that's just garbage. This has been a back and forth debate all season long. Like, it's a history book. They're filling in the lines. And like, that is true to an extent. George R. R. Martin is never going to write a Dance of the Dragons internal POV book. It's just not going to happen. So on the one hand, yes, this is written as a history book because it is purposely displayed that way with conflicting narrators and a narrator who is sifting through their accounts. But there are also moments where that element falls away. Blood and Cheese is a great example of this. And Martin kind of confirmed this in his blog where he just said, this is what happened. Even though there are conflicting viewpoints, there are moments where the that falls away and Martin just tells you the thing that happened, or something is such a matter of public record that it doesn't even rely on the three people whose accounts are being told. And instead the person just says, the maester who's interpreting their account says, we all know this is what happened. Laenor Velaryon getting murdered is a good example of that. Laenor Velaryon died. The show was like, well, what if he didn't? You know, this is history, and who got to write it? You know, the victors. So I think it's taking this is a history book too literally, because these are fictional characters, and the only real account we have of what they are like is Fire and Blood. Martin intentionally wrote characteristics for these characters in Fire and Blood to convey what he thought the characters were like through a murky lens. But to then take, you know, Daemon as a good example, Daemon goes to the Riverlands and immediately starts displaying why he's the most competent battle commander in Westeros and why the Greens should be afraid of him. And the show does the exact opposite. And I think that is a pretty good example of like changes where you're almost taking this is a history book to the extreme, and kind of abusing that as an excuse to basically write, I hesitate to say fanfic because like no shade at fanfic, like it's its own thing. Lots of people love it, but it feels like that when you have like, you have a book you could be adapting events from, and instead you're really just going off down the rabbit hole on your own thing. That really does bring to mind the quotes he said about like screenwriters wanting to make it their own, because when you're leaving out things from the source material to really emphasize plot lines that are made up, that are leaning on that idea of, well, we don't know the actual history, even though like the only history that exists is this book that George R. R. Martin wrote. So like we do kind of, we just don't know specifics. Like the examples where he gives, like these three people said three conflicting things. Usually it's kind of alluded to that one of them is actually credible. So like Helaine, what happens to Helaine is a good example. There are multiple things where it said, this could have happened, this could have happened. We don't know why Helena made her ultimate choice that resulted in tragedy. But George just came out today and confirmed there was an actual reason, and it was one of the three options. And I think that's a lot more prevalent than the showrunners are giving it credit for. So that's one of the things that frustrated me.
I agree that They pick and choose. I mean, in the podcast, he says all the stuff about we fill in the lines, we add color. But when asked about like specific things, he does give specific answers. And I guess you could accuse him of being disingenuous if you assume that, I don't know, they're all back there telling each other like, well, the book doesn't say that this really new crazy thing happened. So it's because it's a history book, we can add it in. I don't know if it's really happening. Like, I understood his reasoning for not including Maelor because of child actor stuff. I even kind of understood their ideas for focusing on Allison or for giving Damon more to do in terms of they want Matt Smith to have more to do and they want Damon to have an arc. That stuff makes sense to me. I don't think you need to justify it by telling yourself that, well, Fire and Blood doesn't say what everything, so we're free to add in anything, because I think that's clearly, if you read the book, you know, that's clearly not the intent. You're right. There absolutely are points where if information is missing, he says so. And if there are multiple versions of what might have happened, he'll enumerate them all. I agree that there's one point in the podcast where Condal says that we give the book reverence, we have respect, but there's a difference between reverence and worship. I think the show is on the wrong side of that line. I do not think it showed enough reverence. I agree with that. Added things in and they subtracted things that were just too big. Like you said, they too often did the opposite of what was written in the book, which is not a good adaptation. But again, I don't think it was malicious. I think they're doing what they want to do. Not the choices I would have made, the choices Martin would have made. But it's what ended up happening. I liked one person up in the chat said that maybe Martin is saying this stuff because he wants to affect things while he still can. While they're still making season three, while there's still a chance for them to pivot at all. The question is, and I don't actually, I don't know George R. Martin myself. My guess is he's always struck me as just an emotional person who loves what he does and loves his characters. Yeah, I think he felt something and he expressed it. The question about that comment, though, is does this have any chance of affecting things going forward, or does this spoil the chance for him to affect things going forward? Because is it going to make a feud from which they can't come back? Or really, could he? I remember like a week ago at some conference, he said, like, I shouldn't warp this at all. There are plenty of authors just turn over their writing materials and then just don't worry about it. Clearly, it's stressing him out. And he doesn't really have any power over this. Like, he's not in the writer's room. He's not on the staff. He has a lot to do. He's always a busy bee. So if they're going to do what they're going to do anyway, there's probably a good argument that he should maybe just focus on his stuff and let the chips fall where they may in Westeros.
I think that's a hard thing. I mean, I agree with you. And I think that is probably going to be the way this goes. Because I think if we're seeing Martin do posts like this, it is because he already probably feels like he isn't able to affect stuff as much as he would like. Sure. And, you know, it's important. So this was another thing that really, really bugged me about the podcast with Ryan Condal. Near the end, he talks about how adapting things for TV is different. Television's a collaborative medium. It's different than those mediums where it's just a single person art form, like writing a book. And like, look, man, George R. Martin, he gets that. Like, he worked in TV for a decade. Like, if this is not, and I'm not throwing shade at Brandon Sanderson here, but this is not a Brandon Sanderson situation where, like, sometimes he talks about TV and stuff, and I'm like, I don't know how well you really know how the whole process works based on the way you're saying things should just be different. Martin never gives that vibe because he's worked in that industry. He fully understands that, like Condal said, you can't have 17 set pieces in a show like this. Like, he gets that, like, totally. Sure. But that, you know, it's all about choosing where you are going to have them. Like, they made a choice to make the sewing a whole big set piece. that isn't really, it worked. It's not really the way it's written. So they chose to emphasize that as a large set piece rather than fit in something like the gullet, which is their choice. That is a choice they made about what to emphasize. So it's not like he's asking for too much. It's all about where you're choosing to put the emphasis.
I agree.
And yeah, I think there's probably already a feeling of things slipping away. And I think Maelor is probably a pretty fair example of that because he was told one thing and then later found out it would be something else. And now he just has no freaking clue what they're going to do with Maelor and Helaena. And Rickard Thorne is completely pointless. I like that he did address like, well, they could do it with Jahera, but like she's important down the line. So I hope they don't do it with Jahera because she's needed elsewhere. So I think that, yeah, I think ultimately he probably will have to surrender some control over this because that is just the way things are going. It makes me really curious for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms because that's coming out next year. And I have heard that there's reason to be optimistic that it will probably be more faithful than House of the Dragon is being right now. And yeah, it's, I don't know, it's weird, interesting times. What do you think? Is there a coming back from this? Is this, what does this do for the future of these things?
They're all mature adults. You can come back from anything like this. The rules are a little different in fandom spaces. There is a bit more open emotion. There's a bit more sharing your opinions. George R. R. Martin, as established as he is, I don't think has ever quite lost the fan mindset where if you like something, you complain about it online. God knows I've done it. And that might not be like the standard operating procedure for someone who's in the industry and a professional at it, but it is what a fan does, and he's a fan. I don't blame him. I don't blame Condal. I agree. I don't think there are bad guys here. I hope they can work it out. I mean, I think whoever said, and you guys are counting so fast I can't keep up, so you guys are great. Julie Davis, of course, he understands the process. I like Victor's comment. I think we should forget about the books and focus on whether they are going to do with the series, whether it's consistent and coherent ending for the characters. I think that's the only sane thing to do.
Sure.
Because it's not the book anymore. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing. Again, I have liked changes from the book. Others I haven't. But the show can still be very good. And there are problems that go beyond all of this. Like, my least favorite change was Alicent working with Rhaenyra, which I do think is just a completely against the spirit of conflict in the book.
I agree.
But I probably would like the season a lot more if they had ended on some kind of big climactic event. And that wasn't about book changes. That was about most likely budget issues, which, although you're right, they could have saved the budget elsewhere and used it.
But that's fair.
It's a messy situation. I hope that everything goes smoothly. And I agree with Victor again that we should just focus on the show, whether it can do good. I hope George R. R. Martin doesn't stress out about this too much and that he focuses on things that matter to him and is happy and also writes The Winds of Winter. And hopefully those two things can coincide.
Yes. I lost what I was going to say. What were you going to say?
Well, I do think that now when the writers are crafting things, season 3 and season 4, they, in addition to everything else, they have to think like, if we do this, is George R. R. Martin going to write an angry blog post about it? And maybe they will, who knows what that will inspire. We're going to do it anyway. Yeah, screw him. Or no, we can't do it. He'll be mad. And will it be good or bad? I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows anything. We're all spinning in a void of chaos and uncertainty.
Yeah, and it is going to be interesting to see how that relationship develops. I saw someone saying in the chat a while back that he should be, you know, griping about the fact that they had two episodes cut off, not directing this ire toward the show writing decisions. And I'll be honest, I don't know what's going to happen now since he's taken this blog post down. Presumably he's been on the phone with HBO today or whatever. Yes. I assumed he was going to get there. I assumed that was one of the things he was going to discuss was the fact that House of the Dragon got two episodes chopped off pretty seemingly late into its development and how that affects things because there's not to use the screenwriter term that you dislike, Dan, but there was an arc to this chapter of Fire and Blood that kind of fell by the wayside because of the way the season was structured. And yeah, whether it will mean that there's more bad blood, I hope not. I think it's so frustrating because, like, I get the Ryan Condal point of view. Like, they do have to make a good dramatic show, totally. Like, George talked about how he had the idea to set the first episode of season one, like, 30 years before, like, Rhaenyra was even born. It would have been The Heir and Despair, which is the...
Sure, George.
It's the story of how King Viserys and Daemon's dad ended up dying, and their uncle ended up dying, which is what caused the Great Council of 101 AC. Was never going to happen. So, like, it's not like this show needs to take the word of George R. R. Martin as gospel. But when he points out these things may have cascading effects down the line, like, that's a gift he's giving you to think about the future ramifications of things. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful that it will all work out for the best. I'm even more hopeful for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, but we'll see.
Something felt off. Yeah, I agree, Chris. We didn't feel off. But again, it's hard for us to know what exactly it was or why exactly it happened. And all we can do is wait and wish everyone involved the best, which I do. And I'm looking forward to Seven Kingdoms, which I do hope is a little more faithful. So usually we've spent 40 minutes on the first section in our outline. We're probably going to have a bit of a shortened rest of the show. But while you're here, do this every week, everybody, at every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Winners Coming Facebook page and the Winners Coming YouTube page. You know what I think you should do? I think you should subscribe to us. I think you should come back and join us every Wednesday or watch our live streams archived afterwards. We make other videos too. We run a website, winnerscoming.net, about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. Subscribe. Click the bell. Leave a dollar under your pillow and we'll come into your bedroom and take it. We won't do that. Sorry, that's just a joke. But I hope that you stick around because we enjoy having you and you enjoy having us. Now, really fast, I'm just going to blast through some of this. Yes, of course.
Before you blast. Also, I said this in the chat, but in case anybody missed it, since this blog post is now down, there are a few places you can find it. One is the Song of Ice and Fire Reddit. We also, Dan wrote a great breakdown of this post that is on winteriscoming.net. So if you, we have not been called by HBO yet, so it's still up. So if you want to go check that out, you can go check out what Martin wrote there. And also we're on Spotify, all those, the typical podcast places too, if you're an audio person.
What if HBO calls us?
That's weird. Joke's we'll on you. I don't get service. I live in the forest, HBO. but yes. All right, so what do we have to get through in the rest of our show?
Okay, really fast, just there's a giant Game of Thrones auction going down October 12th, 10th to 12th at Heritage Auctions in, I believe, Dallas, Texas, remotely. They're going to auction off 900 lots, thousands of props from Game of Thrones. If I could get one, I would 100% get the shame bell, the real shame bell used to shame Cersei through the streets in Mother's Mercy. I would ring that thing so often whenever I was even slightly annoyed. $3,000 opening bid. Probably not going to get it. But that would be awesome. If anybody wants to get me a gift from the Game of Thrones auction on October 10th to 12th, Heritage Auctions, get me the shame bell.
Yeah, they've got, what is that? I see a wheelchair. I think that's supposed to be Bran's wheelchair.
I think it's Doran Martell's wheelchair. Okay. Although Bran's is also on
Dornish.
Sale.
Oh, that's why I got confused. I remember you had mentioned that Bran's was on there.
Yeah, it's also on sale. If you name it, it's there.
Yeah, look at those. There's a traitor, one of those traitor slips of paper that the Night's Watch gave Jon Snow before they murdered him. Lots of good stuff. If you have thousands of dollars to burn and you would like some props from Game of Thrones, you can get them. I think they even have like the touring version of the Iron Throne. I think the bid for that started at like $5,000. Yes. It's like, what, how can I convince someone that we need this thing? Obviously
that would be cool.
Definitely check it out if you're interested. That is, it's a rare thing for a show to auction off like 9,000 items. 2,000 items from its production, with like explicit notes about every scene they were in and stuff like that. So pretty cool. What else is on the docket, Dan?
Also, really, I mean, I wanted to talk because the big show on now is Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power is the main program, the main fantasy program Poker Watching. And I know you guys talked about it last week. What was your verdict on how it's going so far, the first three episodes
of season two? I think it is going fine. I think so. Here's the thing. I'm enjoying some parts of this more than I expected to. I'm catching myself zoning out at other parts of it. I think there's some part of me that is realizing, and you just have to accept this if you want to engage with the Rings of Power in a non-disgusted way, that this is like corporate-made Tolkien.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it feels like it's made by a corporation in a way that not every show does. So I think it's beautiful to look at. I think some of the actors are doing really good work. I'm really enjoying Charlie Vickers as Sauron, Charles Edwards as Celebrimbor, the dwarves. Give Durin and Disa their own show. Like, I would watch a whole show of Durin and Disa just like go into the market and try and
run away with it. Prices. Yeah.
They every time they're on screen, I pay more attention. I enjoy it so much more. Numenor feels a little like I read somewhere that they had some editing problems with Numenor, and I kind of believe it because it doesn't even show up until the third episode and it's a little all over the place. So there are things I'm liking about it and things that are still, it doesn't feel like a huge leap forward, I guess, from season one. Like, it's a little more improved. It's a little more confident, but it is still very much the same show. But I'm happy to be watching it. I'm going to watch the rest of the season. Mm. It is by no means making me like dispirited and upset by any stretch. Like, I have settled in. I'm accepting the ride. I'm excited to see people's reactions to Tom Bombadil because I have seen a few episodes ahead at this point. Mm. And that is coming at some point this season. But yeah, what are your thoughts, Dan? Because your thoughts were the ones we really missed last week.
More or less the same. It's I'm glad that to enjoy this show, I have to just settle into the fact that it's going to be kind of mediocre and pulpy fun at its best. And it is pulpy fun sometimes. It's very heavily contingent on what storyline we're watching, whether I enjoyed or not. I agree with everything you said. The dwarves are great. I like the Hobbit characters. I'm not entirely sold on the stranger plot, but I like the Hobbit characters. It should have been called the Wee Folk, and it should have been just about the hobbits and the dwarves. That's what I would have done if I were making this.
Oof. Where were you when Amazon was holding their pitch meetings?
The Numenoreans are dull. I hadn't heard about the editing thing, but it makes sense because that was late and choppy.
Like it.
And I keep wondering like that I missed something. The humans and the Southlands are boring. They all seem to kind of have the same dour personality, and I don't know why, but I like to look at it. Giant spiders are cool. I genuinely like the dwarves and the hobbits, and I like Sauron. I think Sauron's being good, but yes, you're right.
It's a good season for Sauron.
I don't know. It feels like they look at the story and they, like you said, kind of corporate made. They don't feel like they have this story in their bones and they need to tell it. It feels like they're, how do we get a big hit? So let's kind of string together a series of entertaining events and we'll hope to get to a climax that resonates in a way that is beyond our ability to make it resonate. Can't wait to see Melor and Numenor, says Victor. Yeah. Oh my God. If that happened, I would forgive everything. House of the Dragon and the Rings of Power. Get Melor and Numenor. Love it. It's fine. I also saw,
Said, tell us about it.
For a second, the Lord of the Rings, a musical tale. If you guys don't know, there is a full Lord of the Rings musical, completely full. Full costumes, all singing, all dancing, all Gandalf and the hobbits and Saruman and everybody. It played at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. It's going on tour around the world. It's going to like Auckland and New Zealand, actually, I guess is
cool.
You know, New Zealand, the unofficial home of Middle Earth. So I guess perhaps that's why it's going
has
there.
Has to.
I saw before it ended. I liked it. It was fun. It tried to fit the entirety of The Lord of the Rings into one 3-hour, 2-act play, which did not work because they had to cut a lot. Like, yeah. I'll just go ahead and spoil it. Rohan is not in this at all. Eowyn is not in this at all.
They cut Eowyn.
I know. We should figure, like, come on. You don't want to, I am no man, then stabs her. I don't know. I could do a lot of songs with that. But, I mean, I get it. They didn't have time. You can't do the entire thing in 3 hours. It's not going to happen. I liked it. It was curious. It's for fans if you have a chance. It was just the novelty was cool. Like, oh, Saruman's dancing and singing. Okay, fun. I never expected that to happen. And it's very straightforward. Like, it's not like it's the Lord of the Rings story. But for this production of this play, it's going to be set during the Boer War. Like, no, it's the Lord of the Rings. They're all in Lord of the Rings appropriate costumes.
That's cool.
Like, there's a great set for Bilbo's 111th birthday. They do the Shelob, and they do the Balrog, and they do all the things you're expecting them to hit, except anything to do with Rohan or Helm's Deep. They cut all that.
They cut Helm's Deep. They kept Bilbo's birthday, and they cut Helm's Deep.
Rohan's gone. There is nothing involving any of the Rohan stuff whatsoever. They lost it. How are you going to do it?
That's
so it's
fair.
Fun.
I wondered that when I read your review. I was like, how are they going to do Rohan? How are they going to do Helm's Deep? So I guess that answers that.
I don't think it's destined to become a giant smash hit because it is kind of so at once targeted at fans and also cuts things that fans want to see. But I thought it was fun, and I'm glad I watched it. And if you have a chance, and you're a big Lord of the Rings fan, folks went from my screen, and they were like in Hobbit cloaks and like with elf ears. So people were having fun. So if you have a chance, why not go see it? There is a worse waste of 3 hours. Victor says, Tolkien writing an angry blog post right now.
Victor on fire in the chat. Love it.
Leo asked, I've been to the Burlington Bar and met Sean Tanktop. Leo, I have not been to the Burlington Bar, although I know what they do there. I even think I know who Sean Tanktop is. They had those great like live watch videos about the Game of Thrones episodes back in the day. I think I still do House of the Dragon, but I don't know. It's going to be... I'm nervous. What if I show up to one of those House of the Dragon episodes that they live react to, and it's people don't like it? I might be uncomfortable.
Could get real ugly real fast. Man, Nicole in the chat. Sauron is turning from goo to man faster than GRRM is finishing the Winds of Winter. Harsh, but also true. Sauron turned from goo to man real fast.
I liked goo Sauron. Sauron. That whole first part was my favorite part of the Rings of Power, by the way. That whole first sequence at the beginning of the second episode where Sauron, we kind of like have Sauron's years long journey of becoming of being blonde and then becoming a pile of goo, then becoming a man again. I was like, you know what? I want to get to know goo Sauron more. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed his goo form.
The only thing I didn't love about that is that it made the time feel a little funky. Like you said, years long journey. And it's not really clear how long it is, but like it really made it feel like he ended up floating around and met Galadriel like a few months after he got betrayed. It didn't feel like Sauron had been adrift for years or anything.
Don't
like
think
that,
about
you know?
It. Don't
That's
think
the key.
About it.
That is the key to
enjoying
the
unfortunate thing
power.
Is, and I don't want that to be the key to enjoying a show. You fail on some level if I have to not think about the particulars in order to enjoy a show.
Yes. I agree, I can
still enjoy it, but if I have to not think about it, I'm not enjoying it on as deep a level as I want. And I want to enjoy House of the Dragon in particular on a deep level. And I want to think about it and for new layers to reveal themselves to me. The Rings of Power, I like it, but I've given up on enjoying it on that level. House of the Dragon, I'm having a harder time letting go of, but we'll see what happens in season 3.
Yeah. And to bring this full circle right back around to George R. R. Martin's now deleted blog post, that's basically one of the things he said in it was they could still make everything work, like with Helena, with all those things, but it will, in his opinion, probably be less interesting not being a sequential series of events that logically leads to one another and ties all together that you can think about and it doesn't fall apart after a minute of scrutiny. That's me saying that last bit. But so I agree with what you just said. I think if you have to tell yourself, just don't think too hard about it. A show, unless it's like a comedy or a show you're not supposed to think too hard about, it's failed on some level.
That's a shame. Really fast, Dan. Anything else you're reading or watching you want to talk about really quickly? Hint, hint.
Yes. Always really quickly. I started Terminator Zero. That's cool. Pretty cool. It seems pretty interesting. The animation's exciting. It is very action-packed. Curious to see where it goes. I'm also reading The Gods Below by Andrea Stewart, which came out yesterday. It's the first book of a new series from her, epic fantasy. Got some Elden Ring vibes, a little bit of body horror and some creatures and altered people with horns and wings and stuff. Very, very cool book. I'm enjoying it a lot. What about you, Dan? Watching or reading anything?
Not much. The Rings of Power, trying to get into industry, but I can't find the time. I'm indulging my guilty pleasure for cartoons made for adults, like with a Solar Opposites, this sort of Rick and Morty-esque comedy show that I think is pretty funny. I like that. The Kite Man show is funny. I never know if I should feel guilty about enjoying those kind of shows or not. So no, I'll just put it out there and just let the audience decide. Am I disgusting? Nice. finally, let's get to...
Equivalent to Goose Sauron.
I'm only going to be Goose Sauron. I'm going to write a fanfic about Goose Sauron. finally, let's go to what we have at the end of every episode of Winners of Take the Black, WIC Live, which is the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go over a bunch of stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second takes on them. No more, no less. If we go over, we get punished. Daniel,
shame.
No order, et cetera, and so forth. Complete chaos, like usual. Let's get into it.
Okay.
Daniel, Netflix has canceled the Sandman spinoff, Dead Boy Detectives. Your reaction?
Glad I didn't take the time to care about that show. sorry to the Dead Boy Detectives fans. I'm not surprised by this just because it didn't make a huge splash. It was a spinoff of the Sandman. Neil Gaiman is also a bit of a PR problem right now because he's being accused of sexual abuse by a lot of people. So not surprised they axed a mid-performing show. This is fun. Let's talk about a fun thing, I guess, for everyone except this person who's they got refused. So girl got refused a passport, right?
Passport
because she is named Khaleesi, and the UK government wasn't sure if that name was copywritten.
Yeah, she did get a passport because apparently, whether it's copywritten or not, you're still allowed to name your kid whatever you want. Like, if you want to name your kid McDonald's, go ahead. They can't stop you.
Yeah.
But it's just a fun little holdover from that time. Everyone was naming their children Arya and Khaleesi and Daenerys.
Yeah, yeah.
That comes back to haunt you in some weird, unexpected ways.
Yes.
I came in under. All right. Daniel, this is a show that you liked. House of the Dragon star Abubakar Salim, who played Alan of Hull, was also in the HBO Max show Raised by Wolves, and he wants to revive it. How are we going to do that?
Yeah, so he basically said, you know, let me make a video game out of it. I'll do it, because he's also a video game producer. He just released his first game with his studio. But I think the gist is he would be down for any sort of revival. He said tabletop RPG, comic, more series. I think he just generally would like to see the show come back, and so would all of us. But yeah, he wants to make a video game. Oh, God. All right. We're going to get into the political rushes here just
for 20 seconds.
For 20 seconds. Starfleet Academy just started filming. Elon Musk, the guy who ruined Twitter, tweeted on the platform that is not Twitter and said, let's make Starfleet Academy real. And then longtime Star Trek star Robert Picardo tweeted back, first step, support a leader that embodies Starfleet values like diversity, inclusion, and ethical behavior.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. Just the idea that there's actually a lot of tech billionaires who really love Star Trek. It's very common. And there's also a lot of tech billionaires who build companies that disenfranchise people and do things that are really out of step with what Star Trek is all about. And that's just kind of funny. And to see a Star Trek person clap back is just amusing. That's it. I'm not going to spend too much time. I mean, we could talk about that for ages, but let's move on. Daniel, do you know that pirate sites like the Pirate Bay are claiming to have House of the Dragon Season 2 Episode 9, but really, if you download it, it's malware?
Yeah, I had heard this. There is no Episode 9. Don't download it. The internet is dark and full of terrors, and they will fuck up your computer. Yeah, that's all there is to say. Kudos, I guess, to whatever industrious pirate wanted to go around wrecking a bunch of House of the Dragon fans' computers. You are evil. All right. Which of these want, Dan?
Skip?
Seven. You want this one? Okay, so the first pictures from Jurassic World Rebirth have dropped. That's starring Scarlett Johansson, Jonathan Bailey of Bridgerton fame, and Mahershala Ali. Will you be watching it?
Probably not. I meant to put the picture up here, but I guess I forgot. Yeah, they're making a new Jurassic World movie with all those people. Big famous Jurassic World. Talk about like a really corporate franchise. I'm not saying it's bad, but like they want to put those out so they can get butts in seats and capitalize on those beautiful dinos. I haven't really been interested since the first Jurassic Park. I'm going to ask both of these last two of you. Do you mind?
I don't mind at all. I would love to talk about both of them. So
it's that because I didn't organize this in a way that made things we could both talk about. I know that you enjoy this stuff. Director Dan Trachtenberg's next Predator movie, Badlands, begins filming as plot details surface. You like the Predator?
I love the Predators. And Dan Trachtenberg's last movie, Prey, was fantastic. Best Predator movie in years. So this is a rumored thing. It is not confirmed, but it is rumored that his next Predator movie, Badlands, which is set in the future, stars Elle Fanning, has apparently begun filming in New Zealand. Elle Fanning may be playing a dual role, twin sisters. We're going to wait till we get more concrete info, but it's still exciting. Before you ask me this next one, Leo says HBO has already responded.
Man, so much happening.
So we are going to pause for just a second, or if you want to do the last lightning round, I feel like we should maybe find that
sure.
out.
Sure, I mean, I'll just ask you, and then I'll pull it up on my computer.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thank you, Leo, for dropping that. The news is happening so fast, we're still in the damn show when news is happening.
Okay, but really fast. Daniel, check out the cover of Brandon Sanderson's next book in his Stormlight Archive series, Wind and Truth.
Yeah, this is exciting. So this is the fifth Stormlight Archive book from Brandon Sanderson. It comes out in December. That's The Way of Kings, that series. And this is the end of the first arc of it. It is a 10-book series split into 2 5-book arcs with a time jump. He's taking a hiatus after this to work on other books. So this one is a big deal. And it's also the last cover artwork that legendary sci-fi and fantasy artist Michael Whelan is doing for a book, period. So a big deal on multiple fronts.
Cool. Okay, Dan, I am not finding an HBO. No, do we have a link to this?
Oh, I got it. Okay, so what a way to end our show.
Yeah.
So Martin said this, and then an HBO. This is. I'm going to quote this paragraph straight out of Variety.
Do you have a link?
An HBO.
Put a link in Slack.
Yes, I will put a link. I'll put it in Slack.
Oh, wait, no, I found it.
Well, getting it anyway. Everyone in chat, if you are curious, there you go. It's down in there. So this is the quote from Variety. An HBO spokesperson responded to Martin's complaints Wednesday with the following statement obtained by Variety. There are few greater fans of George R.R. Martin and his book Fire and Blood than the creative team on House of the Dragon, both in production and at HBO. Commonly, when adapting a book for the screen with its own format and limitations, the showrunner ultimately is required to make difficult choices about the characters and stories the audience will follow. We believe that Ryan Condal and his team have done an extraordinary job, and the millions of fans the series has amassed over the first 2 seasons will continue to enjoy it. So there you go. There's HBO's official word on the George R. R. Martin blog post. Any closing thoughts that you want to share about this? Because we're here at the end of our show, Dan.
oh, you've made a mess, George R. R. Martin. I understand why you did it. I get it. But, oh, you made a mess.
When HBO is issuing official responses to basically say, we see you, showrunner, you did a good, and, you know, back them up, that is a sign that the hornet's nest has been kicked, so to speak. So it'll be interesting days to see what happens from here. Not expecting anything tragic or crazy or anything. Just, I don't know what Martin's going to post next, essentially.
God, neither do I. He's made life more interesting for all of us. And that's our show. Everybody watching, please subscribe to us. We're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Winner is Coming Facebook post and the Winner is Coming YouTube page to talk all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, so forth, and etc. Come check out our website, winnerscoming.net. I'm going to say it again. Subscribe to us. We're also available to listen to a podcast form wherever podcasts are available, be it iTunes, YouTube Music, or elsewhere. Victor says Wednesday is coming and gone. Well, Wednesday still has several hours left in it, but Take the Black stream for this Wednesday is over. Loved it. Thanks, you guys. Please subscribe to us. Tell every single person you know to subscribe to us, and we will return the favor by providing you with excellent analysis and mouth talking. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-thru lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-through lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at Menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money.